Hello there. You are about to listen to the podcast version of the Naked American Songbook from WNYC. Sadly, due to copyright restrictions, we can't provide all the music for on-demand listening. However, you can still hear all of my edited conversation with Edie Falco and hear a bit of the music that she loves. Nurse, scalpel. Greetings, fellow listeners. Music is a world within itself, with a language we all understand. So said Stevie Wonder, and well, who's going to argue with him? But it does make a human wonder, since music is a language we all understand, why we don't use it more often to communicate with each other. Wouldn't it be cool if there were a world in which people sang to each other rather than spoke or shouted? Oh, wait, there is. What about those unlucky folks who don't sing? Where can they go to share their stories through song? Oh, wait. I think I know. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. With the possible exception of the scent of a flower you haven't smelled since you were a kid, few things are more evocative of the past than a song you haven't heard in years. Just a few bars of a hit from your childhood can catapult you back in time. And depending on what was going on back then, that journey can be sentimental or painful, or even both. After all, the past can haunt as well as tickle. My guest today is an actor who seems to specialize in people with a past. In her performances as Carmela Soprano and Nurse Jackie Payton, Edie Falco displays an uncanny ability to appear present and haunted at the same time, as if one ear is listening to the other character in their scene, while the other is tuned in to some ghost from the past. And Falco is in that way similar to these women she played, and she has some beautiful stories from her childhood to share with us, and happily, many of those memories are very sweet and vividly underscored by songs from the Great American Songbook, a language we all understand. To get this train out of the station, it seems only appropriate to let Stevie do the driving with a classic from his past that evokes, while evoking, the wonders of a simpler time. Stevie Wonder, I wish songs in the key of life. He makes even getting spanked sound like fun. I wish. Anyway, enough about me. My guest is Edie Falco, one of the most employed actors in New York. The Sopranos.
Hello.
Nurse Jackie, a few dozen films, Broadway.
All right.
But we are here to talk about, expound, and expand upon the Great American Songbook.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm just going to start by mentioning that your father was a big band drummer.
Yes.
Maybe I'm wrong, but did that not have something to do with your love of this music?
That indeed had pretty much everything to do with my love of this particular type of music. All types of music, actually, was my dad. His passion was ever present in the household. He had a drum set in the basement when we were growing up, in this very suburban cement basement, and he would go nuts on the drums while the four of us, me and my three siblings, would dance around like maniacs, you know, on the little broken mattress in the corner. And it's a huge part of my upbringing was my dad's involvement and love of music.
So was he a happy drummer? Well, one of those unhappy drummers.
He was only actually a drummer for a short period of time. He, in his late teens and early 20s, supported himself, Frankie Falco and his orchestra. I actually have the placard that went in front of the Catskill Hotels at which he played when he was a youngin'. You know, and they
So he was the leader?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently he sang, though there are no such recordings. But yeah, he did it for a short time. And then when it came, he went to the High School of Music and Art in New York when he was a kid. Decided to pursue art, which is basically what he ended up doing, being a sculptor and a painter, and then went into advertising art, which is when he finally started to make some money.
Oh, I see. So yeah. He was a real old-school creative spirit.
He absolutely, all across the board.
How old was he when he was leading big bands in the Catskills?
Well, I don't know how big a band Frankie Falco's orchestra was, you know what I mean? Like,
well, the word orchestra implies,
mini,
you know.
It implies,
well,
which is, I think, the whole point.
Well, it's not 90 pieces or section, but what?
I the truth is, I don't know. He would talk about him and his friends.
Uh-huh, right. Okay.
And that's about as far as the story ever went.
It's probably a good way to get with the ladies.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure.
On a weekend evening in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So did he have tunes that he liked a lot that you absorbed through him?
Well, Dad still has a huge collection of LPs. Like, we used to get albums in the mail periodically.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy was that he had written somebody saying he was a critic or something. And we used to get these bunches of LPs in the mail every once in a while. All the new stuff was going on back in the 70s, I guess.
Right.
Or old stuff that was being sent out.
Right.
So he has this huge collection of records. And he was always playing them and listening and sharing them throughout my whole childhood, really. But the times I remember most specifically and with the most poignancy for me was when I was in college at SUNY Purchase. I went up there. I was very shy and had a hard time in the beginning. So he would come up Friday nights, and we would drive from Westchester to way out in Long Island. I don't know what that was, a three-hour drive or something, and just listen to Dad's music. And a lot of it had to do with Jonathan Schwartz. And Dad would tell me whatever stories he might have had about the things or what he loved. And he worked at Colony Record Store as a kid,
So
did my mother, and that's actually where they met, believe it or not. Stories they have to tell about Sinatra coming in and waiting on Elvis Presley and all this stuff.
Isn't she lovely? Isn't she wonderful? Isn't she precious? Less than 1 minute old. I never thought through love you'd be making one as lovely as she.
Jonathan Schwartz, on a Saturday. His struggles are, to me, very moving, and they're very much a part of the story of Sinatra. That's 1976. That's before the trilogy.
Are you kidding me?
No, why would I kid about such a thing? What did I do?
I'm only saying that because when we spoke about you doing this show, you were like, oh, I would have nothing to contribute.
Well, I don't know. They're popping to my head as we speak. I'm like, oh, yeah, they met at Colony.
I'm sorry, but your mom and dad working at Colony Records waiting on Frank Sinatra is kind of relevant.
All right, I don't see these are things I'm learning as I'm sitting here.
So
yeah, they were teenagers, yeah.
That is a beautiful story, and Colony Records was a place.
Huge.
And only recently.
But it moved before, and then as it was closing down, I took pictures and sent them to my parents.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it moved. I think it used to be closer to Times Square, maybe. Then it moved to like 50-something.
51st and Broadway, which
is
where
I
knew it.
Yeah, me too.
It was still sort of a Tin Pan Alley locale,
absolutely.
So it made sense there.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it looked like it had been there for a century.
Absolutely.
But that's another one of those places like Heidi Rogers' joint that, you know, vanished because the so-called advantages of digitization have essentially wiped out.
Made them obsolete.
A lot of the stuff that gave it its charm. That gave, you know, interacting with music, whether it be on vinyl or sheet music or other people even.
Right.
Sort of lost a little bit of its charm.
For sure.
On the Isle of Capri that I found her beneath the shade of an old walnut tree.
I first met Sinatra at a cocktail reception at Tour d'Argent, a very fancy restaurant. And I was with a group of people.
To hear the picture of you and your dad in the car driving, you know,
hours and hours and hours.
Out Long Island listening to him talk about Sinatra.
Mm-hmm.
Big Sinatra fans?
Mostly my dad. He's Italian and born and raised in Brooklyn, a big part of his upbringing and, of course, a big part of mine as well.
Yeah. And he has a kind of fatherly or avuncular quality, so it's natural that a young woman or a girl would associate him with their dad.
Sure. And the whole Italian thing.
My mom always said that Jews were just non-Catholic Italians.
Totally buy that.
And she lived in Little Italy and Baltimore, and you know,
wow.
Whenever she wanted to take a trip, it was always to Italy. She just wanted to be Italian
so badly. Isn't that something?
I mean, I think the only difference was Jewish mothers are supposed to encourage their boys to go be successful, and Italian mothers encourage their boys to stay home with them.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Right. I think it may have been true some generations ago, for sure.
Yeah, my mother certainly didn't do that. But we will talk about that on another show.
All right.
Under another auspice. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's for, yeah, exactly. For Psychoanalysis channel.
Thy mother's delight.
Next to Sinatra in my book is Ella Fitzgerald,
mm-hmm.
who I always maintain is the greatest singer of all time. That even more than Sinatra, we couldn't really have the songbook without her.
Right.
Because she's the archival source. She's the, you know, if you want to know how a song is supposed to sound at its very best, in its purest, most unadorned,
yes. mm-hmm.
you get Ella. And you brought an Ella tune as well, mm-hmm. Smack the Knife.
Yes.
Is this a tune that you would put on, or is just something that found its way into your head?
Found its way into my head. Obviously, I've heard it. It's very hard to know when first or where or under what circumstances, but it's in there. And the fact that apparently she just forgot the lyrics in the middle of this one and just went with it and not a soul would have known, just that spectacular. So
yeah.
much a part of the song that there's no way she could be even separated from it.
Yeah, I think over the years, many people now think the lyrics she was making up on the stage are the real lyrics.
The actual lyrics.
Because she was just having so much fun. It's a great sort of example, I think, to performers all over the world to stay loose.
Just keep going.
Have a good time.
That's right.
That's the lesson I've learned, at least about being live in front of an audience. It's just, you know, nobody really cares that much.
For
one's going to, unless you're in the classical music world, in which you're in big trouble.
That's right.
Clams are not really allowed.
Right.
I think she won a Grammy for this, actually.
Oh.
She won a Grammy for making a giant mistake. And making it spectacularly and beautifully and with a lot of love. So let's not delay. Let's listen to Ella Fitzgerald's famous version of Mack the Knife live in Berlin, of all places, where they might actually have known the real words.
Hysterical.
It's a list of names, this song. Legendary Ella Fitzgerald screwing up beautifully
on Mack
the Knife in Berlin. Well, you know, it's funny listening to it, and I haven't listened to that track in a super long time. I was glad you suggested it. It just exemplifies everything about this music that makes it stand the test of time.
Mm.
That's why the people still listen to this music, why when they get old, Rod Stewart and Bob Dylan and Carly Simon and so forth, they all turn to this music when it comes time to record something truly great again.
Yes, that's right.
And it's her ability, well, her time, obviously, even as she's making up words, her rhythm, her sense of time, as you must know,
spectacular.
You know, having grown up around the drums.
Yeah.
It's just life-giving.
Yeah. She's just in there. There's no separating her from the piece at all.
Yeah. And there's some, I don't know why that is. It's one of the, you know, one of the great mysteries of the world. Why really good rhythm, why good time is a life-giving force. I mentioned to you my dad's a pianist and a really good one, and he talks often about how there are three essential elements to music. There's melody, counter-melody, which is what he calls harmony, and rhythm. And he often says the only one that matters is rhythm.
Wow.
And he makes mistakes all the time. I mean, he's like, it's not a Fleischer show if there's not a couple clams. But the time, the rhythm, the sense of where that pocket is.
Sure.
Is
that
what
keeps driving it. And
it keeps you alive.
Yeah.
It's like oxygen.
Mm.
And so that's why she remains my favorite singer. I'm doing all the talking. Right
no,
now.
Please, go for it.
I just like, I talk and you go, mm.
No, okay, that's what I have to say. I like her.
I know.
She's good.
I busy myself trying to break these things down all the time.
Uh-huh.
Why is it? What is it? Where is the, you know,
right.
What's the bedrock that makes it so joyful?
And I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's the stuff that you keep turning on, though. That's the thing, is you keep finding your way back to it, because it does. It does have some life-affirming force to it.
And even at her darkest, she was always a little bright,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is why a lot of people prefer Billie Holiday or Sarah Vaughan or Nina Simone or Peggy Lee, because, you know, they could drill down a little more deeply into
darkness,
yes, pain,
sure.
loss, all that stuff that so many of these songs deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you had to listen to Sarah Vaughan's Summertime or Ella's, you might choose Sarah's because it's a little stranger.
Right.
Ella had a
buoyancy.
That's the word, buoyant.
Yes. Wonder what it would be like to open your mouth and have that sound come out, like in my next life.
It would be great.
Yeah. I'm with you on that.
I think it's safe to say it would be great.
To just know that she can sort of command it to go where she knows it should go next or wants it to go next.
Yeah. I don't think she ever sang a false note. All the biographies talk about her being sort of uncomplicated,
mm-hmm.
which I think is maybe code for other stuff, but she didn't have a lot of guile. She just kind of went through her life making, being music,
right.
just pouring it out of herself.
That speaks to me, though, in a larger way than most others, that perhaps she doesn't know exactly how it happens or what motivates it to happen. And maybe by learning more or by learning too much, you start to mess with it.
Mm.
You know, some of these things are better left unsaid or just left alone. I don't know.
I mean, she certainly had an ear. I mean, maybe the best ear ever, because she wasn't a schooled musician. She didn't study music, but she shared the bandstand with Dizzy Gillespie.
Right.
And out of her came scat.
Right.
On a scale that no one else has ever touched.
Right.
And that's a question of listening. There's something very unguarded about
the other side of the brain.
I don't know why we're talking about this.
I don't know.
It thrills me to find someone who will talk to me about it.
Someone who will talk to me?
About the Ella Fitzgerald thing.
Oh.
You know, about what it is about this, the very sound of her voice.
She feels left alone.
Yes.
Like a kid singing in the forest or something, just completely not answering to anybody but her muse might be or whatever.
Oh, my God. Anyway, but the flip side to her is often, in my universe, Sarah Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
Whom you also noted.
Yes.
The world often breaks down into camps of one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people in my experience are equally as in love with Ella as they are with Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
They find you have to kind of make a choice, but you don't.
Well, I think I am equally familiar with both, just having heard. And so it wasn't a matter of choosing one or the other. They felt so different that it never felt, you know, like you had to be in one camp or the other. They appeared as often in my dad's lexicon, you know, as the other. So
your dad likes singers?
Yeah, very much so.
A lot of instrumentalists tend to kind of keep singers at bay in their imagination.
Not at all. I mean, he was, you know, a huge Buddy Rich fan and just would wonder at his capacity as a percussionist. But no, he's the reason I know all of these people.
So he would take a Sarah Vaughan off the pile and pop it on the record player?
On the record player, yeah.
Sarah Vaughan always represented some kind of danger to me, like a threat to the Ella perfection.
Huh.
Because she would take liberties.
Okay.
My early experiences were with some really out stuff that seemed self-indulgent, and I swore her off for years.
Wow.
I was played a few key recordings, including this one, which I'd like you to hear. It's her fascinating rhythm that she recorded with Michael Tilson Thomas and the Los Angeles Philharmonic, an orchestral version of this great Gershwin tune that goes through several different permutations of the song and different time signatures and tempos, changes it up, and she just coasts along on top of this orchestra, and it is as joyful as what we just listened to, and very funny and super swinging. If you will,
I will
join me, Edie Falco, at the Hollywood Bowl. Sarah Vaughan, Michael Tilson Thomas, and LA Philharmonic.
Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, all a quiver. Fascinating rhythm, got me on the go. Oh, I'm on a quiver. Each morning I wake up with the sun. Good morning, night, no work has been done. I know that once didn't matter, but now you're doing wrong. When it started bad, I'm so unhappy. One shake a day, I'm sad and run along. So we're far away, I'll make it snappy. Oh, how I long to be the girl.
got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm, you got me on the go. Fascinating rhythm. You got me on the go.
The immortal Sarah Vaughan.
Wowie.
That's why they called her Sassy.
Sassy, that's just about right.
She knows she's a horn. When the horns come up, she gets in there with them.
Yeah, she is definitely, she's taking that music and having her way with it.
Completely different from Ella.
Yeah,
and yet,
spectacular in its own way. But yeah, she's, you're clear who she is, you know, after singing that. She's putting herself in there. In a way, Ella's more, she's purer in a way, with more respect for the music such as it is, it seems.
I don't know. It's ineffable. And as I said, you know, like, I just always try to figure out why.
Mm.
What does it mean? And I feel like Sarah Vaughan is like from another planet.
Yeah.
Like a Martian. She just floats down, picks something up, does that to it.
Yeah.
And then floats back out. Yeah. Yeah. It tears it apart.
Right, right.
But God, the sound of her voice.
Incredible. And I know vibrato people, alone is enough to kind of.
It's crazy, right?
Go where she wants to go.
I saw her once live, and it definitely sent shivers up my and down my spine.
I can't imagine.
I hadn't really come to understand her yet, and a friend dragged me to see her at the Blue Note, and she does this version of Send in the Clowns that's famous, sort of a routine of hers, and she did it a lot. And at the end, she would sing, losing my timing this late in my... And she would hold the word my for a really, 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 really long time. It's not part of the lyric, you know?
Right.
It's not
right.
Like the word
sure.
That's demanding mm-hmm. to be sung. She would lift it up into the air and she held it there. And I remember thinking like, oh God, here we go. See, this is what Sarah Vaughan does. She, she, you know, she's indulging herself. And then she sort of slowly, like with this weird look in her eye, kind of turned her head and swept the room with the note like a searchlight. And it would spin, like she got her vibrato to like spin around the corners of the room and over everybody's head. And the note felt like it went on for an hour. And she just swept the room back and forth with this one note. And so what started off as like a weird question mark turned into like a Faulkner sentence, you know, with M dashes and periods and semicolons. And then finally, somewhere like a month later, she came down off the note and onto the word career, you know, and it was spectacular. Like your head, you just felt your head exploding.
Losing my time here this late. In my career. Well, the clown. To be well,
and all the Japanese tourists start going nuts because that's the only people who went to the Blue Note, you know, back in the day.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think it actually ended up being her last New York performance because she passed away, you know, kind of young. But I remember thinking, oh, I see.
Now I get it.
There's something sublime going on here. I just am talking too much. As you can see, I blabber a lot about Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan. It's just what I do. But coming up, Edie Falco and I duke it out over who loves Joni Mitchell more. And guess what? Everybody wins. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. Ahoy, crew members! We are going to steer this boat right back around to my intimate chat with Edie Falco in just a minute. But first, let's take a brief day trip to
Nailed It
Island, that little spit of land devoted to those tracks that hit the target so hard, the target stays hit. Now, if you have a track that you think,
boom, nailed it,
stuck the landing,
by all means, let us know. Tweet your nominee to Naked Songbook, make your case, and if you
nailed it,
we'll nail it to our wall like Martin Luther himself. Now today, since I have the mic, I'm nominating for our final
Nailed It
of the season, Cole Porter's You're the Top, as sung by Barbara Streisand. That's right. Now, this jumpy little warhorse has been recorded 1,000 times by Ella Fitzgerald.
At words poetic, I'm so pathetic that I always have found it best.
Patti LuPone.
I hate parading my serenading as I'll probably miss a bar. But if this ditty is not so pretty.
Rosemary Clooney.
I'm a worthless check, a total wreck, a flop.
Hell, it was introduced by Ethel Merman.
Bottom baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top.
But Streisand nails it by slowing it down and sexing it up. Like Sinatra, slowing down Luck Be a Lady, she takes a risk that a lesser singer simply couldn't pull off. From her surreal slamming door farce, What's Up, Doc?, the film that introduced the world to Madeline Kahn, BTW, Barbra Streisand, with an assist from co-star Ryan O'Neill, nailing YTT.
There's something I gotta tell you.
What is it, Judy?
Well, you're the top.
I am?
You're Waldorf Salad.
Oh, no, let me say it. You're the top.
Me too?
That's right. You're a Berlin ballad.
Oh, that's nice. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire.
Actually, I don't dance very well.
You are an O'Neill drama.
You're Whistler's mother.
Mama.
Sorry.
You're Cannon Bear.
Cannon Bear. Let's see. You're a rose.
Very sweet. You're Inferno's Dante.
That's a very intellectual reference. You're the nose.
Watch it.
I mean.
What?
Well, I'm the great Durant.
Oh, that's better. I'm a lazy lout who is just about to stop.
Let's not stop.
But baby, I'm the bottom.
She's the one for me. You're the top.
That nailed it. Right? Tell me that didn't nail it. No, I'm serious. Tell me that didn't nail it by tweeting me at Naked Songbook or visit the Facebook page or the Instagram. Whatever. Just don't leave me all alone out here, people. So, back to my conversation with the fascinating Edie Falco. Turns out we both share a love of one human in particular, perhaps above all others. And all I had to do to get her started on the subject of Joni Mitchell was say, Joni Mitchell.
All right.
Go.
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. For as long as I can remember. And another thing that when I've heard her music out in the world, I thought, how the hell did they get a hold of my cassette tape? You know, it's such an intimate relationship in my brain that I have with her music.
Everybody feels that way about
her. And then
her.
I realize that everybody feels that way about her. It's taken me some time to be okay. It's like finding out your therapist has other clients. You know what I mean? There's that moment of like, all right, I can deal with this.
Right.
But I think I was around 10 when I was at my mother was doing a play, I don't remember which one, and I used to go to all the performances and all the stuff, rehearsals. There was a tech, they were doing a tech rehearsal, so people were running around doing stuff, and they were playing Joni Mitchell's Blue Album in the background.
Songs are like tattoos, you know I've been to see before.
I had never heard it before.
Who puts
anything
blue
like it
on in the background?
It was,
what
I mean, while they were doing
barbarians.
Music. I know. Well, while they were setting up the lights or whatever the hell they were doing. My memory was I couldn't believe the sound that I was listening to, and it started then. So 10 years now it's been going. Woo!
Nicely done.
Thank you. So anyway, since then, it's her music has carried me through all the various chapters of my growing up.
It has that way.
For sure.
We're just lucky that she kept churning out masterpiece after masterpiece after masterpiece.
Each completely different from the last.
That may be something that you may also be sympathizing with, is her desire to get out of her comfort zone, to never let herself rest on her laurels.
Right. I mean, knowing that it may not be interesting to other people, like her Mingus album, which I think she struggled to release. And, you know, I know she's had various issues with the music industry.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Of course I can imagine it. But yeah, but never stopped being her and being brilliant.
He is three, one's in the middle unmoved, waiting to show what he sees to the other two, to the one attacking so afraid, and the one that keeps trying to love and trust. And getting himself betrayed in the plan. Oh, the divine plan. God must be a boogeyman.
God must be a boogeyman.
And her capacity to do rock, to do folk, to do the really serious jazz work
Absolutely.
That she did on Mingus and other albums as well. It's staggering. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could literally... I wish there was some sort of shorthand, some sort of German word that could encompass what we all feel about her, which right. is that she's the essential thing.
She is
music. I mean, if I had
music.
To choose one,
yeah.
even over all the people we've already spoken about
yeah.
today, it would
yeah.
be Joni.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. Isn't that funny?
13-year-old boy living in downtown Baltimore in the 70s, it was not normal to be loving this person that most people had never really even heard of at that time and in that place. You know, it's been almost a religious kind of devotion.
I'm with you, absolutely. When her new stuff would come out, when her new albums would come out.
Any one of which any other artist would consider a career-capping
absolutely.
Stroke of good luck.
Yeah.
But for her, it's just one in a long line. She does have a tremendous sense of rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she started singing jazz, it was very natural in a way.
Right.
It just kind of came out of her.
Mm-hmm.
And she famously has said that she identifies with African-American men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who
that's right.
are, you know, for... better or for worse, the people who invented the thing we call jazz.
Right.
So it's no surprise that her rhythmic sense is so strong.
Exquisite, right.
And it's on Court and Spark that the song Twisted arrived.
Yep.
Cinematic, both large and intimate at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
She makes the complicated seem simple and the simple seem complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, Twisted.
Right.
Which was a song that Bette Midler had sort of owned up until that point.
Oh, I see. Randy Ross, didn't she... first recorded?
I think she did originally then, as part of Lambert Hendricks and Ross, which...
Oh, that's right. That's
and they
right.
also... She also does another one of their tunes on Hissing of Summer Lawns. You remember Harry's House Centerpiece?
Absolutely.
The more I'm with you, pretty baby. That
yeah.
jazz song she slips
oh, yeah,
into
yeah.
the
I
middle
like,
of that. That was also a Lambert Hendricks
oh,
and Ross
you're kidding.
Tune. Yeah,
okay.
that she slips in. Then she throws them out and does all the
does
harmonies
some,
herself.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like on the great album of standards that she did called Both Sides Now.
Yes.
You know, she's got all these extraordinary standards.
Yes.
You can hear her saying to herself, now what song do I know that could put a ribbon on all of this?
Mm.
Oh, I know. I wrote it. It's called Both Sides Now.
Right.
And it's the greatest song ever.
Killer.
But let's go back to Twisted because it's
okay.
up-tempo, joyful,
right.
funny romp.
Right.
It's a patter tune. And she killed it.
Yeah.
Instantly the best version of it.
Mm-hmm.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than live. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined when out of his sight to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs, ands, or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
Not bad, right?
Oof.
She was announcing the future.
Oh. All in. She was all in.
I want to say something meaningful.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I've had her address for many years from a friend of mine, and I thought about for so many years about wanting to... had this letter in my head I wanted to compose to send. I just thought, what the hell could I possibly say? What could I say that hasn't been said to her by a gazillion other people? That what and what does that need to reach someone to tell them that? And all of that is my mystery, and so I've left the little address sitting in my iPhone. But yeah, yeah.
Write that letter.
Yeah,
hurry up.
I know. It's been a big thing sitting in the middle of my heart these last few months.
I know, me too. I totally feel you on that. Not since my mom got ill did I feel such a powerful sense of grief.
Me too. Seriously, it felt like something had happened to my mom. This and it carried with me. I kept thinking, what the hell is wrong? Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Like a mother. Like I remember when I first started listening to her, I could feel my brain growing. I could feel the synapses forming.
Yeah.
Like it was that stuff that helped me to become a human. And so naturally I think of her as a kind of mother figure.
Yeah.
You know, and then as you said, like every chapter she's just there with you. And
that's right.
And she doesn't care about you either.
That's exactly right.
She's tough.
It's completely impersonal and deeply intimate at the same time.
Yeah. That's why I love to hear her interviewed, because she really is not precious about stuff.
No.
And I've been told, like, don't ever meet her.
Same here. Same here.
Because she's impossible.
Yeah.
And so be it.
That I'm with you too. I'm on that. You know, she could be what she wants. I don't need to meet her. I've met her in my own way.
We've met ourselves through her.
Yeah.
Listen, we have time for one more song, Edie Falco, my guest today on the Naked American Songbook, the show where we reveal ourselves through our love of the Great American Songbook. And let's face it, Joni's not an American.
I know.
But regardless, I think that she has long ago earned a special place. She's in the pantheon forever because of her catalog and her work. So she gets a free pass here and everywhere else. And she knows it, too. She's the last person.
So.
No, I'm certain of it, that she's the last person you have to convince that she's great. She certainly knows it. She's just all very at odds about the role of royalty that she plays. She doesn't love it, but she doesn't hate it.
Mm.
She always says, I don't like to be talked up to, and I don't like to be talked down to.
Mm-hmm.
So good luck.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
There you have it. My guest, Edie Falco, worships at the altar of Joni Mitchell just like I do. Just like you do. Just like Joni Mitchell does. When we come back, Edie tells us how the Great American Songbook informs her acting. I'm Julian Fleischer. This is the Naked American Songbook, and my guest Edie Falco is about to drop a hint that she might be looking to make some music herself soon. Wait for it.
I was inspired not just by the music, but by my dad's passion for it, the fact that he loved it, and my mother did as well, and my mother was an actress when I was young doing community theater, so I was introduced to that as well. So I don't know, in some bizarre amalgamation, I do what I do now, which I mean, there's so many ways that things are fed by other things that I don't know, because I'm very much the opposite of you, that I don't try to figure out what it is, because that just messes me up. I spend very little time doing that. I spend a lot of time sort of backing gently away from the whole thing.
Oh, really?
For fear that it will fall apart. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm sure my love of music and this type of music is a part of who I am as a performer, but I can't say I know how. Although this latest, very, very recent, last couple of years, desire to do something more with music must have something to do with that. I mean, I thoroughly love the career I have as an actor, but the few forays into using music as a emotional vehicle have been really exciting and fulfilling and completely different from the other stuff that I do. So it's this latest venture, though I don't really pursue things per se. It's in my mind that I would likely say yes to something I would have said no to some time ago.
I told you before we started that I really love Nurse Jackie, and I think part of the reason that I do is the writing, obviously, is so spectacular, and it functions musically. I think really good dramatic writing can have a musical quality, and the best writers for whom every word really matters, you know, say Edward Albee, for example, comes instantly to mind, someone whose plays function like chamber music.
Hmm.
There's a give and take, and everybody's listening very carefully.
Right.
You know, you've agreed on the tempo. I wonder if those things don't play a part in the way you act, the fact that you come from a musical place.
Right.
I'm just making that up.
No, but now that I hear it from a vantage point of someone who has lived in music and knows it, I can totally hear what you're saying, but I would never have come up with that on my own. I absolutely imagine that that must be the case. And it is very much like that. This person shines and steps back, and then the next person comes in, then there's a group thing, and, you know, so yes, it is very much like music. And you can tell, I imagine, just like with music that doesn't work, you can tell when a piece of writing doesn't work for all the same reasons.
Right. And is it true that you thought that The Sopranos was about singers?
I did. I mean, wouldn't everybody?
I certainly would. Yeah. I think when I first heard of the show, that's what I imagined it must be.
Yeah.
Which is part of the beauty of it.
For sure. I mean, I'm sure that wasn't lost on the writers, I guess, though it's never been discussed that would be the name they chose.
I worked briefly with Jamie Lynn Sigler on a project. And,
you're kidding.
And she mentioned that she, too, because she's a very good singer.
Yes, she sure is.
She thought she was going in for a musical.
Hysterical.
But you didn't think that.
No, I didn't think that. But, you know, I was at a very busy time in the career of somebody who wasn't working. So I just had a lot of, you know, my stuff going on, smaller things I was involved in. So when the audition came up, called The Sopranos, I just thought, well, you know, whatever, a bunch of singers. I have no idea why they're calling me. And once I got the sides and I saw there was no music in it, it was at that point when I realized, oh, all right, no, this makes sense.
This, yeah,
I can speak anyway.
Are you a soprano?
No, I don't think so. Or whatever that's
worth. Yeah, you're probably an alto. Oh, if you're going to do Pirate Jenny?
Pirate Jenny.
It's Pirate Jenny. All right, you were right. Well, I mean, I'm not surprised you were right.
Oh, I am. That's why the arms just went up. It's very unlike me to be right.
Forgive me. Did you go in thinking? No. So you once
I was approached about that. I would never have had enough chutzpah to have gone in and said, I want to audition for this or I want to. It was just offered to me as most of the most fun things in my life have happened, mm-hmm. much like the thing that we did together.
Yeah.
My first thought is, what the hell did they think asking me to do this? It's hysterical. Of course I'll do it. So that's how that thing came to be. And then other smaller things have come up that regarded me singing. And I thought, if they're actually asking me seriously to sing for something or other, I'm going to do it.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to whatever it is.
Oh.
Through no fault of your own, I've enjoyed both of your shows.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I consider myself exceedingly lucky on all fronts.
I'm wondering how you'd like to finish up our little time together. I'm curious about this Frischberg song.
That'd be great.
All right, tell me a little bit about it.
Well, it was just another thing listening to in the car with Dad, and he would come up periodically like, see the names going at it. Out of my head. A couple of his songs that became more well-known than others, though he's not particularly well-known. But this one I grew to love, and I ended up buying a recording or two of his and making it sort of my own. He's got sort of a Randy Newman kind of thing or
uh-huh.
something,
yeah.
This everyman quality. And also mixed in with this music and my dad and me, and this is also New York, where I grew up, Brooklyn, and one's very mixed, complicated love-hate relationship with this place. And anyway, this song in particular would help drive that home with me and Dad in the car.
And so you went off and bought a recording of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Go figure.
Not a lot of people do that anymore.
Well, I mean, yeah. Back in the day, I used to do that all the time.
Right, go to a record store.
Yeah, go to a record store.
Right.
Do You Miss New York? Yeah.
Why don't you play DJ and tell the folks about what we're about to hear?
It's a song by Dave Frischberg about New York City, about having moved away and your thoughts about your hometown.
And if I don't see you on the other side of this song, if you're gone by the time it's over, allow me to say thank you so much, Edie Falco, for joining me on the Naked American Songbook and sharing some of these stories with me. It's been really, really lovely.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Here we go.
The frenzy, the faces, and did you trade the whole parade for a pair of parking places? If you had the choice, would you still choose to do it all again? Do you find yourself in line to see Annie Hall again? And do you ever run into that guy who used to be you? Tell me, do you miss New York? Me too. Me too.
Edie Falco, thank you so much for bringing that song.
Oh, thank you.
Really the perfect combination. Hip, happening, and a little bit sad.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave.
I'm never going nowhere.
Oh, and thank goodness for it. Edie Falco, ladies and gentlemen. She didn't want to do it at first, but she screwed her courage to the sticking place, and she showed up here and shared a whole lot of beautiful memories with us. So thank you to Edie. I hope you like season one. It has been real, and I am looking forward to season two. Do me a favor. If you like the show, please download the podcast, write a review, tweet about it, Facebook it, etc. It. Help me make it into a thing. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC, and WQXR in New York City. Aaron Dalton could have danced all night. Ellie Smerling longs for the days of wine and roses. Rachel Neal has a lot of living to do. Mike Shoeb stepped out of a dream. And Graham Parker promises there will be many a new day. Our graphic design is courtesy of David Koval. Our theme music is written by me, and I am Julian Fleischer. Thanks for listening. Keep it naked.
Hope you got it on tape, because I'll deny it to my death.
Yes.
Yeah.